All right, good evening, everyone. We will start in about 30 seconds. All right, it's 5:15. We will begin our agenda session. We will begin with item number two. I'll read it for Councilor Forsman. Item two, Resolution 431, is a resolution authorizing an agreement with the Duluth Airport Authority to ensure certain Duluth Airport Authority property and equipment under the city's property and boiler insurance policies. So I'll pause there and see if there's any questions on item two. Seeing none, we'll move on. We're on personnel. Vice President Timonic, without her here, I'll go ahead and read that one. Item three, Resolution 461, is a resolution confirming the appointment of Chad Ronchetti to the Housing Trust Fund Committee. And item four, Resolution 462, is a resolution confirming new appointments to the Duluth Citizens Review Board. And just so we know, that's Melissa DeRozier Holzhauer, Todd Moss, Bobby Underthune, Leah Hansen, and Sanoa Williams on that one. I'll pause for questions. I have Councilor Owl.
A quick question for administration. Did these individuals apply to be on the board? Were they already serving and this is a renewal? Just kind of curious on the background.
I'll pass that over to Ben Van Tassel and walk you through the particulars of current versus renewals.
Randorf, Councilor Owl, yes, these individuals all applied to be on the Citizen Review Board, and they were vetted and recommended here before you tonight. They are all new appointments, not reappointments, so they'd all be serving for the first time.
That's great to hear that they're all new appointments applying and getting involved. I'm just curious, like, I hadn't seen the interviews or anything like that, or the potential application. So that's why I was asking how the vetting process worked.
Randorf, Councilor Owl, the Citizen Review Board is one of our boards and commissions that we don't set up interviews with the council for. So they are reviewed and then put forth by the mayor to the city council to review those.
Thank you so much. If I could also be sent their applications, that would be great. So I could just personally review them too. I know there was a lot of transition with the Citizens Review Board, so just wanting to make sure we're up to date on everything that's happening.
Thank you, Councilor Owl. Next is Councilor Derwachter.
Thank you, President Randorf. I have a question about item 461. Information about the why is very vague. So I'm curious if we could get more context. Is this a new appointment? I mean, has somebody in Mr. Ronchetti's position served on the Housing Trust Fund Committee in the past?
President Randorf, Councilor Derwachter. So when the Housing Trust Fund was established, a city representative is required to be appointed to the Housing Trust Fund Board. Previously, that had been City Administrator Schuckman. When he left, obviously, he rolled off the board because he was no longer a city representative. After further discussion and having some expertise in housing, thought it was best to move me forward rather than City Administrator Montgomery.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Derwachter. Next in the queue is Councilor Swenson.
Thank you, President Randorf. My question's on the Citizens Review Board. Does that make the board full, or are we still looking for more applicants?
President Randorf, Councilor Swenson, that's full at this point.
All right, thank you, Councilor Swenson. Any final questions on items three or four? Councilor Derwachter.
President Randorf, would you be able to give a little more context to me and to the public listening on what some of the specifics of what the Housing Trust Fund Committee does?
President Randorf, Councilor Durwalker, I will start by saying I am not an expert in the Housing Trust Fund, but the Housing Trust Fund was an established program that had the city capitalized the fund initially. It then has a portion of levy that goes into the fund to keep it capitalized. In addition to that, when the city issues special use permits for any vacation dwelling units, half of that funding also, half of the permit revenue from those vacation dwelling units goes into the Housing Trust Fund. So that is kind of the financing around the Housing Trust Fund. The intent with the Housing Trust Fund is to stimulate affordable housing. And so it's really works as a high risk lender to help offset some of the sometimes difficult financing that happens with the affordable housing in the city of Duluth. One Roof Community Development is one of our major borrowers. We have others like Festies. I think the council is familiar with them, having just acquired a property over in West Duluth to create some housing. We have a number of other lenders. We just voted on potential funding for an 80-unit affordable housing project. So it's really intended to be funding to help make affordable housing possible.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Durwalker. Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. I had a quick question, Mr. Ronchetti. Given that I think from the website it appears Mr. Church is the liaison for this committee, just confirming that that is true, that Mr. Church then would be that staff liaison and then you'd be acting as a sitting member of this committee, but how would that work in your mind? Are you going to defer to Mr. Church if he were to come with a recommendation, for example, to the committee, or kind of take that in consultation as that you're in the same department?
President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, great question. Thomas Church is our senior housing developer, and he does work as the staff liaison. He is also 50% HRA at this time. And so the way it works is that the staff brings forward a recommendation, just like with other committees. The board, of which I would be a voting member, would then vote whether to approve or not. And then at that time, once the approval happens, then the HRA would do the underwriting. Your question about whether or not I would of course take, as with any other board that I've ever sat on, I would take staff recommendation into consideration, of course, but it would not be the sole determining factor.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for clarifying. I know that it's just a little different given CAO Shuckman used to sit on it and there's some separation, but I fully trust that would be something that you all would be able to figure out pretty easily. So thank you for the clarification.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Councilor Owl.
My question regarding the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Last year during budget, I recall that a housing inspector was, an FTE was coming out from the Housing Trust Fund. I believe we reduced our general fund that was going into the Housing Trust Fund, and that position went towards funding the housing inspector. I guess this coming cycle, would that go back up to the full amount that we were previously funding the Housing Trust Fund? Or would it stay at the reduced amount that we put forward in the budget cycle last year? And if that answer isn't here today, that's fine. I would just want someone to follow up with me afterwards.
President Randorf, Councilor Hall, I think we'll have to look into that. I wasn't here last year, so I don't know what the machinations were around Housing Trust Fund. I don't think we ever had staff people in the Housing Trust Fund assigned to it.
President Randorf, City Administrator Montgomery, I know we have not had, we do not pay out of the Housing Trust Fund budget for staff. I think the allocation of levy that goes to the Housing Trust Fund was reduced, is the way I understand the question, in order to afford another housing inspector, but I do not know the particulars around that.
Yeah, we'll let you know as we go through the process as to where that's going to settle out this year.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. I've got Councillor Durwalker.
Thank you, President Randolph. Would anyone in the room, or you can follow up with an email, be able to point me in the direction of where to find the section of city code that talks about the structure of the housing, the Affordable Housing Trust Fund? The structure of the staff, the people.
President Randolph, Councilor Durwalker, I believe that there is, I don't believe it's within the city code. I believe it's in an enabled, we'll have to get back to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Durwalker. Any final questions on items 3 and 4? Seeing none, we'll move on. We are now on planning and economic development. Councilor Nephew.
Thank you, President Randolph. Item number 5, 24-0448, resolution adopting a modification to the development program for the development district number 17 and establishing tax increment district number 37, Incline Plaza Phase 1, redevelopment district therein, and adopting a tax increment financing plan therefore. Number 6, 24-058, resolution authorizing the proper city officials to enter into an agreement with and accept $508,949 in funds from the Youth Prize to provide employment and training services for participants in the Youth Prize Homeless Youth Stipend Pilot Program. Item number 7, 24-0459, resolution authorizing the proper city officials to enter into agreement with Lifehouse to provide employment and training services funded through the Youth Prize Homeless Youth Stipend Pilot Program.
Thank you, Councilor Nephew. Any questions on 5, 6, or 7? In the queue, I have Councilor Owl.
Mayor Randolph. I see Director Elena Fauché from Career Force Workforce Development is here with us. I believe item 7 and 6 is related to Yes Duluth, the Yes Duluth program. I had a couple of my own youth go through that program and I'm very appreciative of it. Director, since you're here today, I was wondering if you could just give a little more information and a pitch about the program and how vital it is to our community.
President Randolph, Councilor Owl. So this is a really exciting opportunity to be a part of an innovative pilot. It is funding that was set aside by the state legislature last year, comes through the Department of Human Services. Youth Prize is a state organization that's administering the pilot. And basically the pilot project is going to be offering homeless youth between the ages of 18 and 24 monthly cash payments with no strings attached for 2 years, but with the offer of wraparound services that are designed and directed by youth. To try to connect them to permanent stable housing, education, employment, bank accounts, and just general life stability so that at the end of the pilot project, they're in a solid and stable place. It's set up as a research project, so there'll be a control group and an experimental group, and the idea is that this is going to demonstrate that this approach is an effective approach to achieving the outcomes.
Director Fauché, will we get updates or could after the program kind of concludes, could that data come back to council?
Absolutely, share it with council. Yeah, I would love to. We're really excited about it. This has been in discussion for more than a year. There's a task force, a group put together by St. Louis County that's been talking about how to achieve zero homelessness among youth and young adults. And so there's a number of partners in the community that have been a part of building this. And now we were offered the opportunity to provide the direct services, and we'll be doing it in partnership with Lifehouse. I would very much like to present the results to council.
Thank you so much. And just one last question. You mentioned multiple partners, and I want to also recognize the partners that the Workforce Development Center is working with. What are a couple of the other community partners in this project? I know Lifehouse was specifically mentioned in the resolution.
Yeah, Randolph, Councilor Owl. So the grant is coming through Youth Prize. They're going to be hosting a community of practice that's going to include us and Lifehouse in Southern St. Louis County, Lutheran Social Services, who will be the service provider, Northern St. Louis County, Youth Link, which is an organization in Hennepin County. They're the other county where the pilot's taking place. And then Boys Fort is also going to be doing a group that's indigenous focused. And so together we'll be co-designing the project with Youth Voice involved. And then, you know, in terms of making referrals and connecting the participants to what they need, you know, it'll be a huge network of community partners depending on what they need, mental health, healthcare, housing, et cetera.
Amazing work, Director. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Follow-up question on that. I know that Lifehouse lost its 10 emergency housing beds. Do we have beds for those folks? How have we solved that need?
Yes, President Randorf, the project itself isn't going to be providing housing. We'll just be connecting to the available housing resources in the community. A lot of the youth participating will already be in housing through Lutheran Social Services, potentially Lifehouse, kind of the other HRA, the other networks in the community, you know, and part of our goal will be to connect them to unsubsidized stable housing where they can stay long term, because often they'll be in some kind of transitional housing or transitioning out of foster care. So Lifehouse is going to help with those navigation services, but not necessarily provide any of the housing themselves.
Thank you. Excellent. Thank you, Director Fauché. I have Councilor Director, was this for Director Fauché, your question? Okay, sounds good. Well, thank you so much. All right, go ahead.
Thank you, President Randorf. This one is about item number 5. The tax increment financing plan, on page 7, it mentions a letter would be provided and a pro forma justification that would talk about the high cost of the redevelopment and the need for the TIF. And my question is, I guess I haven't seen that documentation or that pro forma that got mentioned, and could we be provided that?
President Randorf, Councilor DeWachter, this is as it relates to the TIF?
Correct. If I could clarify, the application for the TIF assistant.
President Randorf, Councilor Durwalker, the pro forma has been in consultation with our TIF expert, Ehlers, along with our staff, has been reviewed and has been dissected, considering the amount of invoices I've signed quite a few times and quite a bit. It's not typical for us to provide the pro forma as a part of a certification process, which is why it wasn't provided. I will check with Ehlers, our TIF consultant, to see what the process might be to provide you with some level of documentation around that.
Thank you. As a follow-up, so it's not common for that to be public info?
President Randorf, Councilor Durwalker, that I think so. We don't typically put it as a part of the council review. I will get back to you.
Thank you, Councilor Durwalker. Any final questions on items 5, 6, or 7? Councilor Mayo.
President Randorf, Mr. Ronchetti, this question's for you probably. So on the attached document with the DITA plan and the Ehlers report, I was just trying to completely understand the makeup of kind of the estimates. It looks like there was one building on the site that was evaluated, and it's like a little field house or something, if I'm correct. The STC building is not included in the evaluation of this phase. Is my understanding correct with that?
Right. President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, Manager Pervenanzi's in the weeds on this one.
Thanks.
Thank you, President Randorf, Councilor Mayo. What the STC building is not part of. What makes up this TIF district is a blighted structure. And in the case of the old Central High School development, there's actually three blighted structures up there. One was obviously the entire high school. The second was the STC. And under further evaluation, there was another building, a bathroom that was associated with the football field that was considered another blighted structure, which could give this district in the future the flexibility of up to three TIF districts.
Okay, thank you for the clarification. So this is just, this TIF district only includes, does it include the old central lot as well, where that had been demolished already?
President Rounder, Councilor Mayo, it includes a portion. So basically for this particular TIF district, the blighted structure for the TIF is that old bathroom. For the second phase, if we get to that point, that the blighted structure would be the old high school, and the third would be the STC building in the future.
If I may just ask a follow-up question with the TIF for this phase one, just to clarify with my understanding with yours of any public infrastructure must be placed first before the TIF would be fulfilled. Is that correct? If there's no public infrastructure built here and the project for some reason weren't to move forward at the rate we expect, there wouldn't be a TIF TIF reimbursement necessarily from this project if there's no movement. Is that right?
Randolph, Councilor Mayo, that is correct. This type of TIF agreement is structured as a pay-go note, which means they have to build the infrastructure, build the facilities for them to get reimbursed.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Next is Councilor Durwachter.
Thank you, President Randolph. In the TIF plan, it is noted a list of authorized uses for with dollar amounts that are quite large, like the site improvements preparation is $10 million. Do we have any supporting documentation to show how those numbers were reached?
Randolph, Councilor Durwalker. Yes, we do. We've been reviewing, permits being submitted by the applicant, by the developer. As we all know, since we started talking about this project, the need for the infrastructure is the most important part to get the site viable for use. Costs have been going up, so it is quite expensive, but we can provide you further estimates if you would like.
Sure, I guess to clarify, not necessarily what's in his applications, but what you've done to estimate what those costs would be, what the city has done to estimate what site improvements and preparations would cost. Does the city come up with a number?
Durwalker, I mean, the city doesn't necessarily go out for bids. Obviously, we work with our engineering department, our construction services department. So, I mean, we have an idea of what a linear foot of water pipe costs. So we can calculate rough estimates. Obviously, bids are kind of our what is what the project is going to cost. But I mean, we do have rough estimates, I guess, to answer your question.
Would it be, follow up, please? Would it be possible to have those a summary of those rough estimates broken down a little bit more than what we have here sent to the council?
President Randolph, Councilor Durwalker, I can work with city administration to put together some type of estimate on what construction materials are available.
Yes, Mr. Montgomery, please.
Darf and councilors, Councilor Durwalker, I think it's important to keep in mind these are estimates. These aren't going to be what the TIF is calculated on. It's going to be actual costs incurred. And so, as to what comes through the TIF and what the reimbursements are, it's going to be ultimately on bid and constructed invoices. So, I mean, we'll come up with what we can for estimates, but that's all it's going to be is broad estimates, and it's broad at infrastructure estimates, but that's not going to be what drives the actual TIF costs. It's just a rough estimate.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Director. Next in the queue is Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randolph. And this might be a question for Manager Privenitz, or it might be for the team who's here today from the project. I just was curious. I know the last time we had talked about Incline, there was kind of the next phase that was mentioned with this loan and the project financing, and kind of wondering where we're at with that, and if the developer has kind of secured or passed that point of financing and getting that loan from the bank, because I know that was another thing along with the EAW and some other things that were mentioned with this project.
President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, I will not comment on the, I will let the developer answer on their finances, but you did mention the environmental review. I just wanted to touch on that was completed and passed at Planning Commission in May. So just a note, we did an AUAR, which kind of provides that site more flexibility beyond what this developer is proposing. We actually looked at land surrounding that. The school district owns some sites up there. There's some tower land up there. So we did set the stage for even future development up there beyond what the developer is proposing. But if it's President Randorf, if you'd like me to yield to the developer to answer the financing question, I can.
If the developers are here and they would like to come up, that would be fine, sure.
Hi, I'm Jeff Schultz with ICS. I'm part of the development team. So Chair Randorf and Councilor Mayo. With regards to your question regarding the developers securing financing, so the developer, first of all, has been paying all the bills for the design so far and assisting in the AUAR process as well from a financial perspective. They have been paying through design, so we are about 60% of design of the first building, which would be the condo building, and been paying the bills all along through cash. So they have not secured financing for that. They are working on their financing package, including the TIF, as a really important component of that for that first building. The discussions we had this week were they're very close to having that secured. In addition, we are 90 some percent done with the infrastructure for the first TIF district, which would include the ring road coming up and around to connect the first phase of the TIF. And we're working really closely alongside the city and the engineering department on those to have them prepared and ready for permitting, pending the TIF. But we're very close to being able to break ground here, I would say this summer, for both the infrastructure as well as the first building.
Thank you for the context. And if I may, I see Mr. Ronchetti in the wing. I just wanted to ask a follow-up, Mr. Schultz, or I don't know, maybe it's for staff. We have heard some concern about the road and the infrastructure there. And you mentioned, I think you said Ring Road, is that correct, for the road kind of connecting up to the development? Has there been any initial conversation about that traffic volume and kind of phases of this project and how that will impact traffic flow up in that area?
As part of the AUAR, a traffic study was completed as part of that, and we've been working very closely along with the city in partnership with the Minnesota Department of Transportation, who is currently and beginning a study of the central entrance. And so they've taken into account the amount of housing and traffic flow from the traffic study into the work that they're doing along Central Hillside. Again, part of an AUAR process, a reminder for council, is that it will be revisited every 5 years, right? So again, we'll continue to explore and look at the traffic. In addition, we've been working with the city about a possible connection to the development site down to Lake Street, just below the hill, as another opportunity to add and connect the neighborhoods together.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Nephew.
President Randorf. So just for clarification, unlike when we are, as a city, replacing our lead pipes and we send things out for an RFP and we're paying the money, this is a private development. So therefore, the numbers and things involved with the infrastructure is 100% on the developer and it's reimbursable costs. So that is why the city does not have those numbers. Am I 100% correct on that?
President Randorf, Councilor Nephew, that's exactly the structure of the pay-as-you-go tax increment financing. The developer takes on the cost of building the infrastructure, submits the invoices that then get reviewed for eligible expenses. Those eligible expenses are defined by the state through state statute as to what is eligible and what isn't, and then we reimburse through the increment to repay for those. I'll also mention that as a part of the development agreement, to get to some of the other question too, is that prior to the commitments of any of the construction for any of the projects, we will receive construction costs certified estimate of the total cost of the construction project, as well as the construction contracts that have been secured and signed, and then copies of loan commitments and other financing commitments obtained by the developer for construction financing. So all of that stuff is checked and balanced against through before the project work can even begin.
Thank you. And one more follow-up question. So if the cost of the infrastructure exceeds the allowable amount of the TIF, that is 100% on the developer and wouldn't come back for a higher TIF amount with us.
President Randorf, Councilor Nephew, correct. As a part of the, we have not gotten to the promissory note portion of this. So as in order to meet the requirements of the development agreement, we will go through a promissory note establishment piece where we determine what the maximum value of the note, the TIF note, will be. And should any cost exceed that promissory note, that would be a cost borne by the developer.
Thank you, Councilor Nephew. Any final questions on items 5, 6, or 7? Councilor Durocher.
Thank you, President Randorf. Does the city have a method for measuring the cost of return on issuing TIFs when we say that it will benefit the community? Is there any sort of return as measured by common financial ratios that might be used in real estate?
President Randorf, Councilor Durwachter, the economic benefit once the TIF district sunsets or is decertified, the economic benefit to the city, of course, is the increased tax base that resulted because of the development. The purpose of TIF is that under state law that development would not have happened at all would TIF not have been provided. And so, but for that financing, the development wouldn't have happened. So the benefit, the cost to benefit ratio is the creation of that tax base through the financing mechanism of tax increment. Did that answer your question?
A little bit, but I'm just wondering if there's any sort of method that really shows the math for the public and for council.
President Randorf, Councilor Durwachter, I don't have that on me. I'm not a TIF expert. Ehlers is our contracted TIF expert. I'm sure they have something. To that point, I just spoke with President Randorf about doing a committee of the whole on TIF for the council. And so some of those questions would probably get answered as a part of that committee of the whole. But again, I don't do the calculations myself on the TIF, so it would be a question for the expert.
Okay, thank you very much.
And next in the queue is Councilor Nephew.
President Randorf, so I can probably simplify some of that question. So how much do we, this might be more for the developer, how much do we believe the development's going to be worth at the end, like in increased property value? I forget the numbers off the top of my head, so I apologize.
The sum of the development right now at today's dollars is about $500 million, so about $500 million. So that would be the full value. And I think, in addition, I think there's additional benefits. You know, I'm a community guy here, too. We're taking blighted buildings and a property that we're unable to sell, and we're able to turn it into community assets, and particularly to help with the housing crisis and the challenges we have as a community. In addition, as part of the development agreement, the developer and the negotiations that we worked on jointly with the city is committing to using some of that space for public amenities. So a trailhead building will be built at least 50% of the cost borne by the developer. So they're giving up some of the private land that they have for community benefits, and both that as well as a community pavilion that would be a public amenity space would be part of the development, and that's part of the development agreement and the TIF commitments as well. So if that's helpful.
To increase our tax base by about $500 million less, how much was the complete total cost of the TIF that we were giving again? Yeah.
President Randorf, Councilor Nephew, the $500 million number is the expected total benefit over all phases. The current TIF, which was approved back in February and is in front of the council for certification today or on Monday, it's in the statement of purpose for this total phase is estimated to be about $170 million for the taxable market value increase for this one. And the total TIF package, the net present value of that is $30 million. And so that of course, over the life of the district, the total estimated tax increment is about $75 million. But the net present value today is about $30 million. And a lot of that is public infrastructure. That's why this first phase is so heavy, is because of the road and the utilities and stuff to extend to make the rest of the site developable as well.
So just to make this simple, we're giving about $75 million in TIF in order to get a $500 million project off the ground, which means we'll have about $425 million in added property that we can tax, which I think right now we get about 28% of the property tax on that. Is my math basically there on that?
Randorf, Councilor Nephew, the $500 million is the total investment. We're only talking about the first phase.
The project, we're looking at $500 million of increased property value, in which we're going to get about $425 million of property tax or property that we can tax at the end of this project.
Nephew, it's important to note that there will, should there be a second and third phase of this project, there will be additional TIF districts. So there will be additional tax increment that is yet to be calculated. So we can't make a direct correlation from the total value of investment versus the first phase of investment, which is why I point to that $170 million number, because it's that's the first phase.
Thank you.
Next in the queue is Councilor Mayo.
President Randorf, I had a question about the public amenities or public value. I know that at our last discussion of the TIF district and in some subsequent conversations I had one-on-one with the developer, had furthered that discussion around the STC building and if there is potential use, and I'm just curious if there's any updates, given that the STC building, as we had discussed, is not part of this phase one, if there's could be potential use, or if the developer has been in conversation with local partners about community benefit from that space in particular.
Thank you. Yes. So a couple things with the existing STC building. First off, the developer's looking at possible using the building for instead of construction trailers. Since the building's there, it might save some costs from having construction trailers throughout the site. So we'll have construction offices in the facility. Also potential of building a demo apartment and a demo condo building inside there that would be kind of illustrative of what a potential buyer might look at or a potential renter, so they could kind of see the view and see what the apartment would look like. In addition, they've been working together in the city. I want to thank the city and Ryan helping out with this. But the folks at Chum, as you know, are looking at a new facility, and they've been looking at the STC building as a potential place to store some of their supplies, equipment, furniture while they're in construction and so on. And so we've been working closely about having a rental agreement, a really cost-effective one, for the folks at Chum to be able to use the STC building, which will be sitting vacant anyway.
Thank you for that clarification. And I know that was one of my open questions about that conversation with Chum and where that ended up, and glad to hear that it's still happening and potential use could happen at STC.
And a rental agreement this week for that. So thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Next in the queue is Councilor Owl.
Thank you, President Randorf. My question actually goes back to the previous conversation. I just wanted to clarify that, again, Director Ronchetti, you were talking about we're just looking at phase one and looking at the development cost estimate and the TIF that would be coming out of that development just for phase one. Phase two and three, potentially at that half a billion that you were talking about, the $500 million, that potentially might not come if those phases don't go forward, right? Right now, we're just focusing on phase one.
President Randorf, Councillor Owl, that's correct. We're only looking at phase one. This is a certification of the council-approved district, and this is just for the first phase. The condo units and the 220 unit apartment complex. It's as for context, it's important to know that this first phase will build the public infrastructure that will make the rest of the site buildable. So, should the developer not move forward with phase two or phase three, we will have both the public infrastructure that provides access and utilities to the site, as well as that living document AUAR, so that the environmental review will already have been completed should another developer come in and take over, or should they sell the property, or whatever. That we have prepared for that contingency as well by having a living environmental document that would be applicable to any future development if this one were not to move forward.
Just to clarify, so phase one, I remember from the previous conversation a few months back that we had regarding Incline, was this is just the condos, this is just the market rate, the luxury and market rate housing that's going in. If this phase one, were to go well, then the developer is looking to extend phase two and three. And at that time, with two and three, there's a potential of having a conversation about affordable housing. Am I recalling that correctly?
President Randorf, Councillor Owl, that is correct. If this phase goes well, they would then consider the second and third phases, and at that time we would engage in discussions around affordable housing.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Councillor Durwachter.
Thank you, President Randorf. Another question for for you, Mr. Ranchetti. Will you please clarify, there were so many numbers that were thrown out earlier, will you please clarify what portion of this phase that we'll be voting on Monday, what percentage will be go back into the tax base as not a TIF? I'm sorry to not have the correct language there.
President Randorf, Councillor Durwachter, the current tax rate, so when you certify a district, the current tax rate that exists today will be frozen, and that's what we will continue to collect as tax. That will go into the city general fund. So we will still be collecting tax at the baseline as it exists today. Any increment that gets created, any additional tax value that happens after the development, that is where the financing comes from. So what that percentage is, I don't know, but the taxable value as of today will still continue to be collected and added to the general fund.
Thank you.
President Randorf.
Mr. Montgomery.
Randorf, Councilor Durwachter, and Chad, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically that existing baseline today is essentially the land value and whatever other items have been done to this point.
President Randorf, Councilor Durwachter, that is correct. And in fact, in the in your statement of purpose in your resolution, it shows that the property is generating currently 37,000 or so in net capacity today.
Thank you so much. Any final questions? All right, seeing none, we'll move on. We are now on Public Works and Utilities. Councillor Mayo.
President Randorf, item 8, resolution 444, is authorizing application to the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority for a loan from the Drinking Water Revolving Fund for improvements related to New Duluth Lead Service Line Replacement Project, PFA Project 1690011-14, as described in the loan application. Item 9, Resolution 446, is authorizing the application to the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority for a loan from the Drinking Water Revolving Fund for improvements related to the Raleigh Street and Chester Park Alley Lead Service Line Replacement Project, PFA Project 1690011-18, as described in the loan application. Item 10, Resolution 447, is ordering the closure of 92nd Avenue West between Idaho Street and Hilton Street. Item 11, Resolution 455, is authorizing an agreement with MSA Professional Services Incorporated for construction engineering support and inspection services for the 2023 lead water service replacement project, New Duluth Neighborhood, for an amount not to exceed $295,030. And if I may, President Randorf, I had a couple of questions. First, I wanted to start off item 9. Very happy to see both Raleigh Street and then in my district, the Chester Park Alley service line project. That's been a project that's been in the works for a few years now, so I just wanted to clarify, and Mr. Montgomery, if you don't have this answer, I can follow up with Mr. Benning more directly as well. If this project will move forward, the Chester Park Alley project in particular, with or without the funding from PFA.
President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, I'll check with Mr. Benning. We're confident we are going to get the PFA funding, but I will check with him as to where those funding sources would otherwise come from.
Fantastic, because I know that I have a number of constituents who have been waiting on that project and will be really happy to see it done, because I think it's been 3 or 4 years in progress right now, but certainly that alley, but then also the underlying infrastructure, I think, is the most important piece that people often forget about too. And then finally, my second question was about item 10, resolution 447. So the closure of 92nd Avenue West, I was curious, it looks like there's one property on that map that may have some sort of access or driveway that's currently leading to 92nd Avenue West. Is that going to be affected by this closure? And have they been consulted in this closure proposal?
Randorf, Councilor Mayo, we have fully consulted with all the owners, fire, all the access folks, and there is no access concerns around this closure of this little stretch.
And to mitigate or reduce the amount of dumping that's happening there, is there anything else besides the closure of the street that the city can do? Or are we just going to put up signage or boulders or something like that?
And Randorf, Councilor Mayo, will have the curbing that will go in. We may put up, sometimes you'll see at the end of dead ends, like 3 signs in a row with just kind of dead end type situations. At this point, we'll start there and we'll evaluate and see what happens and what we would have to do if that's not effective. We'll take it one step at a time.
I assume that's because people are dumping physically out of their vehicles rather than walking it over there. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Councilor Mayo. Any final questions on items 8 through 11? Seeing none, we'll move on. We're now on Public Safety Committee. Councilor Swenson.
Randorf, number 12, 24-0424, resolution approving settlement in the matter of Jared File versus Tyler Liebfried and the City of Duluth in the amount of $600,000 pursuant of the terms of the settlement agreement. Number 13-0432, resolution authorizing proper city officials to accept a grant from the Minnesota Department of Public Safety Office of Traffic Safety in the amount of $115,000 for the purpose of providing additional traffic enforcement along Skyline Parkway and Grand Avenue in Duluth as part of the 2025 Safe Road Grant Program. And I may. On number 13, so with the grant, first, awesome job to city staff on securing that for us. When it has Skyline Parkway, is that the entire skyline, or is that focused more around the Enger Tower area where we've had the incidences?
President Randorf, Councilor Swenson, it is from Mesaba going west to 40th Avenue West, then down 40th, and heading further west down Grand Avenue, kind of in a continuous loop out to the Gary neighborhood. Those were identified through traffic engineering as areas of most concern.
Thank you, Councilor Swenson. Councilor Owl.
Thank you, President. Since we're talking about Skyline Parkway, amazing job to city staff, with that grant. I know a few weeks prior, there were 5 of us counselors who attended that community meeting regarding Skyline Parkway and kind of like future visioning of it. I just wanted to know if there was any constituent suggestions that were potentially taken from that. Was the plans revised? When can council potentially see an update on that? Just curious about where everything's at.
President Randorf, Council Owl. I just met with our engineering team that were at that meeting. We were taking in all of the inputs we got at the meeting. We thought it was a very good meeting, a lot of good commentary, a lot of good discussion. So we were combining all that information together and distilling it into sort of a revised view and vision of what that might look like. We're finalizing that work over the next couple of weeks, putting together a revised proposal, and we hope to be able to come up with a follow-up meeting in late June, somewhere around the last week of June sometime, hopefully before the 4th. Depends on if we can get all this work done before then, but that's what we're targeting. And if that's the case, we'd have that meeting, and depending on the feedback we get from that meeting, we very well may be able to come to council by the July 15th meeting with the various resolution issues and ordinance issues that are required to do the project and make some of the changes that we would be thinking about. So we are moving. It is moving along. The input has been terrific from the community, and the digesting it and putting it from the air onto paper, and hopefully we'll have something good to talk about in late June.
For following up with that very concise plan that you have, looking forward to just hearing more about that. And also thank you to, alongside myself, Councillor Swenson, nephew Randorf, and Tamonic had attended that meeting. So I appreciated my council colleagues being there, and Councillor Swenson, your leadership on this being your district too.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Next in the queue is Councillor Mayo.
Randorf, on item 13, I know this came before the MIC policy board as well, and some questions that came up that I'll kind of toss into this conversation as well. At the city, are we pursuing any further grants for other speed control or kind of incident mitigation in the areas mentioned, especially the Skyline area? Because I know in our conversation at the MIC, there was conversation about speed tables and enhanced pedestrian crossings, things like that, that aren't covered as a part of this grant. And I think this will take some really good steps, but I'm wondering about what other funding might be available, I guess, that we could be pursuing at this time.
President Randorf, Councilor Mayo, some of that will depend on what we come up with ultimate design. And what some of the requirements are to achieve that design. There may be opportunities either from the MnDOT side of things, federal or MnDOT side, around road design, safe routes type of funding. We also think there may be other grants that are normally parks-driven grants around thinking about separating vehicle traffic from pedestrian and bike traffic, essentially making bikeways, pedestrian ways, through that scenic corridor. We think there may be some interesting opportunities for grants to secure help in the funding based on what we want to do there. We're hoping, as long as we're dealing with this, we have an opportunity to kind of make this a special little strip, basically around the front of Enger. So we think there's opportunities on the park side in particular to deal with some of that pedestrian stuff, but we are looking at all things. It'll be more clear once we get a kind of a final design together.
That's great, thank you. And I know from just previous history and in my district, we've got the campus connector trail, that sometimes that parks funding does open up a variety of different transportation related road crossings and things when you establish it as an official trail. So glad to hear that's being thought about, and looking forward to seeing what's coming next.
Councilor Mayo, any final questions on items 12 and 13? We're now on Recreation, Libraries, and Authorities. Councillor Owl.
Thank you, President Randorf. I do believe, I think there might have been one more question.
Did I miss one? Oh, did you have another question? Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
On item 12, could we get a little more context, please, on the case of Jared File versus Tyler Lipfried, please?
President Randorf, Councillor Derwachter, if you're asking to discuss the underlying litigation, I would have to recommend to President Randorf that we close the meeting, as you are seeking information from us on ongoing litigation.
Do we currently have a meeting set up as a council to learn more about that case?
President Randorf, Councillor Dirwachter, I do not believe that there are any meetings scheduled regarding this particular litigation at this time.
And so our only method of knowing more is just doing a little research on our own, and then we just discuss it and vote on Monday.
Or as noted, President Randorf, you could close the meeting and we could answer your questions now.
Meet privately with at a later date, or what are you thinking?
I could meet privately with you, Ms. Fred.
If they're interested in closing the meeting and having any other questions, I would recommend that you have a meeting with the attorney. Is that okay, Attorney Frelick?
Councillor Dirwachter, I can absolutely have a one-on-one conversation with you as your attorney seeking advice on this. Sure.
Guys, I'm unfamiliar with the process on these things, so thank you.
All right, thank you. Any final questions? Last call, item 12 and 13. Don't be shy, put your light on. Anyone? Councillor Owl.
Thank you, Chair. I'm just going to request that if there is a meeting happening, if I can be included in that, just to understand exactly what we're voting on Monday. And then also, and I'll go into my committee. Item 14, Resolution 450. Resolution authorizing an annual funding application to the Cross Country Ski Trail Grants in Aid Assistance Program. Item 15, Resolution 451, Resolution authorizing annual funding application to Snowmobile Trail Grants in Aid Assistance Program.
Thank you, Councillor Owl. Any questions on items 14 or 15? Councillor Dirwachter.
President Randorf, could we get a little more context about the snowmobile trail grants and aid? Is this something that has occurred in the past, and is this an ongoing thing?
President Randorf, Councilor Dirwachter, yeah, this is a recurring program for both our ski trails and our snowmobile trails. It's to provide additional support in maintaining those trails. There's a statewide interest that DNR has in, you know, providing access, and so they help provide dollars. Usually it's over a three-year period, and then they're renewed, and then they're renewed. We've been doing this program since I was here back in 2009.
Okay, thank you.
Councilor Dirwachter, any final questions on items 14 or 15? Seeing none, we'll move on to our final item. We're on Public Works and Utilities. Councilor Mayo.
Thank you, President Randorf. Item 16, Ordinance 21, is authorizing a street easement to the city of Rice Lake over, under, and across real property at the Riley Road Tree Farm for nominal consideration.
Any questions on item 16? All right, seeing none, that is it for our agenda. Yes, Mr. Montgomery.
I have the answer and you're all here. I thought I'd get it. Regarding Councilor Mayo's question on the Chester Park Alley, if we do not get the funding, we'd still go ahead and attempt to do it. But we have also had this out to bid before and got no bidders, so because it's just this little snippet. So if we can get it combined in with something else, but it may be a difficult project to get. But we'll do our best and see what we can do to get it done. So it's a caveat is all I'm throwing out there.
Okay, that's it for our agenda tonight. Just to note, we will be back here Monday. We start at 6:15. We've got a committee of the whole for community crisis response. So see you then. Thank you.